All right, welcome to the Trusted Partner Network workshop. My name is Guy Finley. I'm the executive director of CDSA. I'm also the chief executive officer for the TPN. Thank you for taking the time out of your afternoon to come learn a little bit more about our program. We're actually doing a three-part program today. We'll do some TPN 101, kind of give an overview and an update for those of you who are new and may not know the ins and outs of the program. Obviously, we're all board members of TPN. And then we'll head into an impromptu and a very short, it's a quote-unquote panel discussion, but hopefully some of the panelists are here in the room, people who have been through a TPN assessment and would like to talk about that process. That'll go quick. And we'll also do a quick update on our Guardians program with Cyril Rickleton-Abdi as part of that. And then we'll move into our final session where Keith Ritlop, who is the chair of the App and Cloud subcommittee of the advisory committee to the TPN board, on App and Cloud will give us an overview of what we can expect, what to come, and where we're going. So we have about 90 minutes of programming here, but we're going to try to squeeze it down so that we get on time to hit our 6 o'clock cocktail party, because we know that that's that's the big primary goal after the afternoon network break. But if my board members would come on up and join me, let's at least get started with TPN 101 so that we can kind of pace through this program. So while they're coming up, how many of you have heard of the TPN? Okay, this is good. This is good. How many people feel like they know what it really is? Well, maybe we'll cut this even shorter. This is good. We could do some private demos in one of the room. On stage here with me, obviously, as their titles reflect, COO, CTO, CEO. Boy, this is the real C-suite. Whoa, hello. But also, you know, all the work that we do is voluntary. So Kurt works his day job at the MPAA. Ben works his day job now at Amazon Studios. And of course, I'm the executive director of CDSA. I'm also the president of Mesa. But we do spend a considerable amount of time on this project and have over the last year. We solidified our agreement in October of the previous year and really launched in April. And the program really kind of got up to speed and all firing on all pistons. Or just after the summer, right? So right August, I think. August 1 was really our first in-the-field assessments after we got through beta tests. But ultimately, we're here to talk a little bit about the design of this joint venture between MPAA and CDSA, and also some of the next phases as well, I think we'll get to in the end, and talk about our mission. So we'll flip on over to the deck if we can do that, and I don't know if I've got a clicker. Oh, look, there it is. I recognize that logo. I'm going to give this to you, to Ben. So here's the thing. Kurt's lost his voice. All right, I've been talking all day. I've been talking for 2 days, to be honest with you. So I'm slowly losing mine. So we're going to leave a lot of this up to you, Ben, because you don't have enough thing going on in your life. Certainly, I'll interject where appropriate, and Kurt will croak
grunt in acknowledgement.
If he disagrees with anything, if you hear a grunt on the side, then we'll just turn around and we'll try to get it from sign language from Kurt. Let's just talk through this deck if you want to. We're going to be very casual. And by the way, if you have questions about any of this, any piece, any part of the process, raise your hand. I'll throw this microphone at you. we'll have somebody get a microphone out to you. This is meant to be an interactive session. This is where you ask questions. This is where we dig a little bit deeper. And we're here, so we're looking forward to engaging with all of you. So, Ben?
Okay, so we're going to cover a fair bit of ground. We've got 30 minutes. There's about 20 slides here. So raise your hand if it's interesting and you have a question. Wave if it's boring and it's too much detail. I try and kind of keep this relatively engaging and interesting for you. So it's super rewarding to be here a year later. This time last year, when we were up on the top deck, we asked that same question. The guy just did, how many people know what TPN is? There were maybe two or three hands. And we were just getting ready to launch the program. So it's really rewarding. That first phase that we defined and we spoke about conceptually this time last year is operational. So it met this main, you know, some of the objectives we're looking at here in this slide, kind of visualizing the previous state where the four vendor facilities, though in many cases they're undergoing an MPA assessment, a CDSA assessment, other framework assessments, being assessed by any number of the 28 member studios that are party to TPN. So this is the current state that we have already made good traction. I'm going to speak just loosely in terms of numbers to give you a sense of throughput. We have over 500 vendor facilities that have submitted requests to undertake a TPN assessment. And in completed and paid for, and in just about to be completed, we've got about 140 assessments. So just to give you a quick frame of reference on that throughput, that is, as Guy said, that's our first 3 months. That's from August 1st when the first assessment was executed to today. The CDSA and MPA programs combined completed 74 assessments the previous year. So one of our key performance indicators was the capability to meet and exceed the capability of the existing programs and add in some additional optimization. The program is a joint venture, you probably saw it from the previous slide, joint venture between the MPA and the CDSA. It's a non-for-profit entity. It is sustained from the goodwill of its members in terms of the design and strategy, and the finances are sustained through a maintenance fee that's collected by the assessment. So there's no other funding, goodwill and service fees that are collected. Now, in terms of that payment process, this is moving because it is a single assessment that service providers can present to the information owner, to the content owner, to demonstrate their compliance level with our framework. We are moving to this being a service provider funded model. This diagram, by the way, I know it's an eye chart for those of you sat out there, but it's on our website. Again, quick reminder that all of the materials that we're going to be talking about today are up on the ttpn.org website, the trustedpartnernetwork.org. Certainly a copy of this diagram is. It's important in the pre-audit phase that the service provider understands what the key stages are in terms of negotiating, selecting, submitting the pre-assessment materials, going through a negotiation process with the qualified assessors, and the platform presents this list and the contact information, negotiating terms, and then making payment, and then the assessment is scheduled. Only once the assessment is complete and the report has been QC'd by Kurt's team as part of the MPA's governance practices, payment then distributed to the qualified assessor, and the reports are published out to the community. So, if we look at this slide, really the diagram on the top right hand corner, I think is the important piece, because everything we've been talking about in terms of operational activities for phase one have been around the facility assessments. And we will be, as we kind of, those of you that were in the session this morning, kind of talked a little bit about at NAB or early next year, we'll be talking about the launch of the cybersecurity services, the application security assessment phase, the cloud platform assessment phase, and our threat correlation service. But the top right hand corner kind of shows our objectives of the assessment capability, the threat advisories, the training and awareness activities that are already underway, events such as this, and we have some members of the TPN vendor community that have been invited to and are attending the session today, and then obviously on the top left-hand corner, the platform itself. So the bottom right-hand corner actually kind of represents the old way of doing things. An audit was conducted and a certificate was provided. And then maybe the facility got assessed again a year or two or three later. So we're moving away from any weight put on a certificate. All of the content and information owners that are party to TPN use the database as that reference source. When a certificate is provided, it's just pointing the information owner, the content owner, to go to the vendor roster system and verify the status of that facility, and in future that application, that cloud environment. I'm just going to keep on playing through until I see any hands.
We're just over here coughing and hacking and amusing, so you're doing great.
So So the, again, referring back to the ttpn.org website, we're posting materials up there, including our Guardian's newsletters. So every other month, we're sending out to, actually, I kind of should stop for a second and just kind of, when a service provider goes through their TPN assessment, they are required to provide at least one security advocate. Those security advocates are enrolled into our Guardians program. They receive invites to these kind of events. They receive these newsletters. And over time, we're looking at other opportunities to ramp up our ability to connect with them and deliver them information relating to our industry security issues. And that will include some of those threat advisories.
And I think we're gonna have Cyril come up and talk a little bit about this as well. So,
I'll move along from this. Just bottom left-hand corner, a copy of the TPN training course that's issued to employees of all of the service providers that handle sensitive information, including the Guardians. Okay, so a lot of the underpinnings, we talked about all the logistical effort of creating a program like this, and with all of the moving parts, all of the simultaneous assessments, I kind of gave you some rough numbers in terms of our throughput currently, but all of our research and evaluation work up until the launch of the program indicates that we have about, on the facility side, we have about 3,500 service providers that handle pre-release assets or other sensitive materials in our industry workflows. So it's a process that requires, when you take into account all of the preparatory work, the assessment workflows, the remediation workflows, maintaining the accuracy of all of that data over months and years, we need automation. You need a secure repository for that data. I certainly don't want any of that pre-assessment or remediation data traversing email. We want everything in an encrypted state within this platform. So we have a platform that has the following role-based portals. The main GRC platform that runs the software, an iPad application that the assessors in the field use to gather their observations and verify work with information that was provided in the pre-assessment phase. All of the pre-assessment information gathering, the questionnaires, the NDAs, the remediation tracking, the actual assessment report itself is delivered to the service providers through the vendor portal. And then, as we kind of just mentioned a second ago, the vendor roster, where the content and information owners verify information about the service provider. Now, this is I'm just going to give a quick plug to some of our future state work. This is currently a platform that's hosted and managed by TPN, and eligible entities log into that platform. In 2019, we're launching the ability to license a version of this GRC tool at your company store. If you are a member of TPN and you're eligible to receive profile and status data, that information will propagate out. If you're not, it's a product that you can use in a standalone fashion. So just more on that in the future, just worth a plug.
I would also say, in here, it's important that we keep these different segments of our user base segregated, right, for security concerns. I mean, ultimately, this when you say, oh, we're trying to get everybody in on one platform, it just ups the ante in terms of that platform security level and their strength. And we thought about piecing this out in order to maintain those secure environments and keep everybody in their lane, so to speak, from a data perspective as well.
Just before I may move on to the next slide, I'm going to embarrass Katie Pickrell just over here. Raise your hand quickly. Katie's the product owner, leads the development teams associated with this product, so don't necessarily inundate her with questions, but she definitely deserves some kudos for the work that she's done to get us to this point. Okay, some eye chart slides. We're actually just getting ready to this we've had this deck for a little while, so we're getting ready to launch Shield 2.0 for this platform. That'll be the version that we license. These are the current state views. Just to give you just a quick view in terms of that roster, when the content and information owners go into the tool, what do they see? They can either type in the name of their service provider, and then they'll get the profile come up. It's, again, I use this Angie's List or kind of Yelp analogy. There are numerous analogies, but it's just this very, very simple search engine style interface. Or what we really encourage the content and information owners to do is do this reverse lookup. Rather than going through all of the logistical effort to find a partner that provides a particular service, come to the platform, do a reverse lookup, show me all the map painting service providers in Beijing that have the appropriate security level. So just some other simple views. This is a test record. It shows in its current state, it's very simplistic profile, all of the services that provider is providing, where they're located, who the points of contact are, copies of that, again, if the individual has sufficient privileges, copies of the questionnaires, copies of the redacted assessment report. One of the initiatives that we have underway in 2019 is to make this more of a marketplace, having more information that the service provider can provide about their products, about their team, about their facility, so it has a bit more rich color, so it's not just this very dry security status reference tool.
All right, do you want me to, let me take over, come on, here we go. Yeah, great. Jane, we'll get a mic to you. James is over there. Yeah, perfect. Thank you, Jane.
And really an on-site, I'm going to go take a look and see for myself. Is this correct?
That's correct.
That is correct.
Okay. So when I, as a content owner, go in to take a look for, let me see what, you know, assessments have been done, is it clear what kind of an assessment has been done?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then as just a follow-up question, of the 100 assessments that have been done so far, how many have been remote assessments? And how many have been that, you know, eyes on?
I think the majority of them have been physical and on-site.
Yeah, about 95% have been physical on-site assessments.
Yeah.
Okay, great, thank you.
We're also leaning towards that because it's a more in-depth
exactly.
piece. And I think the other thing that speaks to that is remember, the approval to use that vendor doesn't lie with us, it lies with the content owner.
Right.
So if the content owner requests an assessment, 9 times out of 10 they're requesting that on-site assessment because they want to know as much information about that facility as possible. So, and not to say that the remote assessment is diminished in any way, but ultimately there are some things, especially around site security, that you got to look at cameras, you got to see swipers. You know, there are things that you have to kind of get physical evidence for. And I think also as we get into App and Cloud, there may be even more remote assessments simply because it's like a penetration test or a vulnerability scan or something like that. Oh, yeah, hold on, wait for the microphone. Sorry, it's like Phil Donahue here.
Yeah, I have a follow-up on that, so I was also curious. So is it up, someone could choose to have a remote assessment even if they're here in Los Angeles and there's plenty of certified assessors locally, or does it matter? Is it only if they're in a remote location where there's no local assessors?
That's a very interesting question. And I think the idea also is when vendors elect, first of all, they go on the TTPN site and say, hey, I would like an assessment. I want to work with these 28 content companies, and I'd like to get through it. That tends to be an on-site assessment. Remote assessments tend to be follow-up remediation items. Maybe a particular studio content owner would actually request a remote assessment, maybe to double-check on a particular piece of it. And correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it really ties down to the relation to discussion with the content owner or the information owner to determine what level of verification they're looking for. So what you will find, I think, is, you know, certainly as this grows and spreads, the content owners will be pretty clear that if it's a sensitive asset, they will have wanted an independent qualified assessor to go through and verify the effectiveness of those controls. But with lower sensitivity information and assets, a remote assessment is entirely feasible in many cases. But certainly to your initial question, remote assessments are not only for facilities that are far away. It certainly can be. It's not based on geographic propensity to the assessor.
Thank you.
Oh, Linda, we got a question down here. Sorry, that's good. Keep them coming. We'll question away.
Thanks. Can you describe a bit how do you qualify the assessors? How do you determine that they are actually qualified to do the work?
That's going to close.
So, maybe if I whisper, it'll work better.
Yeah, whisper.
Okay, I whisper. No, that won't.
Celebrity whisper.
The candidate assessors will contact us and indicate their interest. They're asked to fill out an application form. We have a matrix of criteria that we look at for them to achieve a threshold of understanding not only of the security aspects of their background, but also their industry knowledge, so that we get a sense of, you know, whether they understand the workflows in the industry, as well as, you know, their content security background. So it looks at their credentials, it looks at years of service within the industry, it looks at a variety of things. If they pass that gate, they're welcome to sit for the exam. There's an examination that takes place. It's a 50-question multiple choice test. Upon fulfilling those requirements, we do a bit of a background check, a reference check, if you will, to verify at least three of their previous employers that were relevant to the industry. And having passed all that, then they can become a qualified assessor, whereby they go through a set of training about our processes and how to use the platform if they're not already familiar, and all the other elements to become, you know, a qualified assessor.
And I'll just add also that those exams are proctored at MPA offices. Mm-hmm. So you have to leave your phone out. It's not an open book test by any means.
Another important part of the process here is
Cyril's bringing water. Thank you, Cyril. He is a guardian.
Yes. when the assessor submits their report, once they've gone through this fairly rigorous process, once they're in the field and they're conducting the assessments, when they submit that report, it's going into Kurt's governance team. They do a scoring process, a quality assessment of the report. Only when it's met that quality score is it then released to the vendor. They have a period of time to verify that they agree with all of the observations and non-conformities that are highlighted, and only at that point is it then released into the platform.
And those gentlemen are here right now.
Jeff, raise your hands. Excellent. Got two team members over there. Go ahead, Linda, follow up.
So do you actively go out there and try to recruit assessors? Because this is pretty small for the LA-based
It's very small for now, but the idea also is we've placed advertisements in different territories, and the idea also is we don't just want to be London, LA, New York. We're looking for Asia is a hotbed area where we're looking for qualified assessors in that area. Because the other thing that when you have assessors in an individual area, you're not paying for the travel to fly somebody from London or fly somebody from LA to Mumbai. So we're always looking for candidates in those areas. It's hard because also it's a new program. And also as we prove and do more numbers in terms of, we look at these 3,500 vendors in our sphere of where we're at. That's when we're really at scale. And that's really when it's like, okay, I can come in as an independent qualified assessor and make a very nice business for myself doing just assessments in Australia or just assessments in India. So that's the vision of the program was to have qualified assessors all around the globe in certain areas, just to avoid those circumstances where you're paying for the travel to get there. So absolutely, we're looking for it. And we do LinkedIn ads. We also ask our constituents, if you know people in those areas or even in any of the metropolitan cities who are interested in applying, you go right to the ttpn.org site, you say, I want to become an assessor, and then Kurt follows up by email and gets you engaged in the process. They start going through your credentials and looking at that whole piece. Excellent. So for this slide, one question in the back, and I'm going to talk while you go and get the mic, because I think we can get off the slide. So essentially, the MPA and CDSA, this is a joint venture. We've leaned on our particular strengths as associations to delineate the responsibility. I think the most important piece of this slide is to understand that the MPA best practices, which were worked on for so many years, that we also had a standard that we sunsetted, but we were always tit for tat on our upgrades, making each other's standard and or best practices better. The MPA best practices are the forward-facing document for this program. So you can go online, you can go to the TPN site and it hyperlinks to it. But ultimately, that's kind of the study book to say, what do I need to do? A lot of people say, what do I do to prepare for this? I mean, that's really the starting point. That is the public version of the control framework that's in the background. We may have over 1,000 controls, but the best practices are what we can say. They might be too prescriptive for us to share with the industry on a whole. So we always look to those best practices, and also that's also something that the Content Security Working Group at the MPA continues to provide input into updating and upgrading those. So I'm expecting another revision next year. I think we've done annual revisions, and it's through our governance committees now. This is a little dated from a responsibility perspective. We have TPN-specific committees that work on finance and budget, community and outreach, governance and operations, and of course, technology and development of the platform, where we break it down further in subgroups for site security, app and cloud, and site security. Platform, thank you. another great participant, Daniel. I think we can skip on to the next slide. I mean, ultimately, these are more operational pieces around how does this whole machine work. We had to explain it to our constituencies, our individual memberships, to get the buy-in. They had input into how this was developed. And now they, through these TPN committees, it's no longer in the MPA or in the CDSA. We're in TPN working on TPN together with our members. Question in the back?
I know... earlier this year, there was talk of a pre-exam for assessors. Has that been published yet?
It has not been published. We have talked about this. We also talked around sample tests. There are question marks about that. That is working its way through committee. To be perfectly honest, I think it's also something where we wanted to ensure the quality of our assessors coming out of the gate. And not broaden it. You know, when you get a pre-exam, you kind of do that overnight, late-night study, and it's like, oh, okay, I got a C-. I got through this course. We're looking for A work here. But it is something that has been expressed and requested, and it's also something the natural iteration of a standardized test means that you want it to keep going and keep evolving and changing. So when we get to that iterative phase, I'm sure the existing test will become our kind of sample test, and we'll break it out. But again, it's not as easy as let's just make this sample test. This does have to go through committee. We have to agree upon this. And then, of course, that's advised to the board, and then we make the ultimate decision. So a lot of process around it, but absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's definitely fair to say that there will be more materials available to prospective assessors, giving them some reading suggestions and so forth. So this slide here, just quickly, this is actually one of the original concept materials when we were building and designing.
The logo wasn't even in there. Yeah. That's how original it was.
But basically what this was, we were trying to kind of break out the roles and responsibilities. There's a couple of important things here that are worth noting again, kind of alluded earlier. No data leaves the TPN platform ecosystem. Everything from the initial assessment request, the questionnaires, the responses, the reports, the feedback, everything lives in this closed walled garden. And also we have this kind of delineation of responsibility between assessors and remediation consulting. Our plan is over time, as we build out this pool of qualified assessors, there have been some, without kind of using any explicit examples, there have been some cases where we've had service providers in our community that have sought consulting advice to prepare themselves for an assessment, or just general security guidance, which they paid good money for, and unfortunately that hasn't aligned well with our industry best practices. And in a few high-profile cases, they have then been subject to a data breach. So our part of this plan is that not only can you go through and get your assessment and all of the different assessment types that we're looking at in the future, you can also come to the TPN to get a qualified assessor to give you independent consultative advice.
Look, I can speak to that as well, because so we had Larson Studios here. Was that last year or was it the year before?
This was the example I was brought you into. But yeah,
that, right. Yeah, I mean, we could talk about it because we talked about it publicly. But ultimately, they had paid a consultancy to come in and paid tens of thousands of dollars to be advised about their security status within our business. And come to find out, they missed one really big gaping hole in an old...
More than one.
But oh, sorry. Sorry. But the one that really was the big, and so you kind of say, wait a second, we spent all this money, we should be getting the right advice. So we knew that we had to have some type of program for that consultative advice where you could rely on people that actually are in this business and know how to plug these leaks.
Yeah, it also goes back to the earlier point. Ideally, we're trying to build a pool of assessors that can, this can be their full-time job. We've got, you know, people in Australia, people in Singapore, people, you know, around the world that they're doing assessments, they're providing these consulting services that are completely aligned with our framework. Okay, so now let's meet. This may be a little out of date.
We're still kind of on track.
Vendor
training launch, yep, okay.
So we launched, we built and launched, got to an operational state for these facility assessments in phase one. We actually launched the vendor training platform pretty much right on time there. The app assessment phase there really represents build and deployment. And build is defining the all of the controls, determining what the qualified assessor framework is going to look like for the app assessment phase, building out the capability within the platform to accommodate those workflows. And then, looking to launch.
We got the ISAC in there and the Guardians, where the Guardians launched as well. That's absolutely appropriate there.
Yeah, so this app and cloud work is definitely the most complex undertaking. There isn't anything. Phase one, as I mentioned earlier, kind of replaces the previous CDSA and MPA assessment tracks. The app and cloud work hasn't existed in our industry previously. Another quick plug on the website, if you are interested in keeping track of the work that we're doing, we try to put a lot of our kind of key materials up on the website.
James, got a question up here? And we're going to bleed over into the panel discussion as well. No, please. Of course.
So when you're talking about the application part of the program, are you also bringing in a broader sense of applications that include hardware components, things like network devices and remote KVMs and things like that?
Initially, from a configuration perspective, secure configuration guidelines relating to those not sure exactly when. We certainly have had a number of requests from the content owner community about playout devices and hardware devices. It isn't in our current build-out track, but it fits logically into the work that we're doing. Certainly, we put a heavy emphasis on starting to collate and build these secure configuration guidelines and that I think when it comes to firewalls and other rack devices that we won't necessarily have the capability to do assessments for out of the gate, they'll fall into that category initially.
It will take time. Okay. Oh, here are some of our, yes, absolutely. So here are some of the member companies of obviously the MPA and also the board of directors and content advisor companies who are involved on the CDSA side. So it's really the member companies of the MPA, but also the two governing board members of ACE. Karen was here earlier, and I don't know if she's left, but Karen here was earlier talking about ACE. And talking about their mission and what they do from their side. Those two governing board members are Netflix and Amazon. So that's kind of the eight on one side. And then not only is it board of directors, but also content advisors to the CDSA. So people like BBC, people like BT who are in the room. People who traditionally wouldn't be an MPA company, may not even be an ACE company, they do have an option of somewhere to go to engage, work with it, and gain access to the tool. You do have to be a member of one of our two associations and be a content creator in order to gain access to this tool. But you can see quickly also how it's not just studios. It's studios, it's television networks, it's production companies, it's, you know, Lego. I would say toy manufacturer, which is odd, but they also create a ton of content in our space. Electronic Arts on the video game side. Virgin Media. I mean, it's really something where you look at it, it's meant to be a broad base. It's meant to be we call this the Trusted Partner Network for a reason, not the Film and Television Partner Network, Trusted Partner Network. We do have designs to be broad and to make sure that where we have these similar issues and similar needs from our third-party trusted providers, we can all get on the same page and then have that data for our industry in one source.
Yeah, this is actually up on the website, so you can keep track of. When we talk about our TPN content and information owner constituency, this is the group, and it's up on the website. And definitely, yeah, this is, as Guy said, this should give you a sense of how we're running broad. This definitely isn't feature production and post the distribution only. This is we're running much broader than that.
It's also a global voluntary program, so I think one of the important pieces, and this was one of our strategic initiatives that we announced yesterday at the board meeting, and Alex Pickering, the head chair of our European committee, who did our keynote earlier this morning. We intend to go to all the major broadcasters in as many European territories in the shortest time as possible. So if you're making original content, the Canal Plus, the Mon 5, I mean, I could rattle off a bunch of European content creating names, but the idea is let's get them in this. Let's see who the vendors they work with and have them encourage their vendors get into this pool. And it could increase our 3,500 to say 5,000, because there could be, much like Hollywood, there could be very niche providers in a specific country that we just don't know about because they only work with them on five. And it's like they're the French, fire maker of choice in terms of feature productions in France. But anybody that's creating content, really, we're appealing to them and their trusted partners to come join this group, join this mission, join our industry. Because we also believe that with that expanded footprint, expanded database, we're going to gain data out of this, and this isn't, you know, this is like industry data. What's the number one remediation item across all these vendors? So, you know, because of that scale and that information being in one spot, we can anonymize, cleanse data, and present it to us to say, hey, we really need to start looking at this. And it's not just pulling a rabbit out of our hat and guessing based upon what we hear in the marketplace or just from our smaller studio members. This is based upon sound data that's actually happening out in the field. That's, I think, one of the goals. So what we'd envisioned, of course. Oh, question? Yeah, got a question over there? Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Sorry to run you over there, Guy. You're going to go a little bit over. But we often get asked one question, and that is, who carries the liability for the findings? And I think the audience might benefit from
who carries the liability for the findings of a TPN assessment? Well, you bring up an interesting question, Mr. Johnson. First of all, the approval is not up to us, right? So ultimately, if you want to work with a particular facility, and they are handling your crown jewels, right? They're your, you know, the most amazing piece of content that you create as a studio. You're probably going to want to do a little bit deeper dive. We intended this program to cover, you know, rising tide floats all boats, cover 80 to 90% of the basic security requirements. So you're not going into the dark in certain territories or working with vendors who may have not been seen for months, if not years, based upon a phone call and a recommendation. But ultimately, it's the studio that does the content approval and says, hey, this is who gets in. So not that it's a declination of liability, but our program is not geared, and we're a nonprofit. It's not necessarily geared to assume the brunt of that. So we're not saying that they're certified. We're essentially saying that here is a snapshot in time, and here is easy access to the information of that snapshot. So ultimately, it would probably be the content owner that would be the liable party of something, or that vendor. That's their relationship ourselves.
Dan Robbins, who couldn't be here today, is the assistant
thank you.
Legal counsel at the MPA as part of the governance responsibilities. Dan sits on our executive board for TPN. The limited liability clauses that are included in the assessment agreement have been worked out extensively. I cannot recall exactly the
well, we're not attorneys either, thank God.
So what we can do is we can get you a definitive answer on that very quickly.
I mean, ultimately, you know, I think one of the nice one of the benefits of the MPA, not that we don't have CDSA lawyers, but you know, this is an the MPA is an organization that has existed for a long time to protect itself, protect its members, and drive the industry forward. And I've been particularly thankful also for this band that we've put together, right? I always joke that Kurt's the quiet one, but he's literally the quiet one.
We're so
now you're Froggy. But we stay in our lane. Let's get a mic over to Lulu, right there in the middle. Ultimately, we play on our strengths. And keep those decisions. So Dan would have a much better response than any of us could have for that type of question.
A simple thing though is that the assessments are reports. There's not a certification.
Correct.
So
snapshot in time.
All you're looking at is a report. It's up to you. It's up to the content creator to decide if that report meets their requirements.
Correct. Absolutely. And the other thing also is that also speaks to the annual assessment. Rather than wait 2 years, I mean, the idea is this is a voluntary program. You want to get in there and see what's going on, see what the delta is between that first year and that second year. That's where it really gets interesting and fun, is that we get into the second year of assessments, of TPN assessments. I think that also speaks to, you know, how we're trying to build efficiencies and drive efficiencies in this business with this program. This is intended to be a cost saver for everyone. Studios, vendors, and a time saver ultimately because of the way the process works. And we've been very particular about creating a process or a machine that can handle the scale, but also is effective and reliable. So that's the other important piece. That's why we have that qualified assessor program. This is not a self-cert. That's why it's important to do the on-site assessment rather than the remote assessment.